This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, filling in for Neil Conan. President Bush will focus on the economy this week with a two-day economic summit starting tomorrow. Six hand-picked panels of corporate executives, policy advocates, and academics will discuss issues ranging from Social Security to jobs. The Social Security issue is getting the most attention, but tax reform is also on the agenda, and the president has said simplifying the nation's tax code will be a high priority in his second term. The last major overhaul of the tax code was approved by Congress in 1986 under Ronald Reagan. We'll be discussing the president's economic priorities and tax reform today. Is tax reform an important issue for you? What deductions would you be willing to lose for the sake of a simpler tax form? And what about proposals such as a flat tax or a national sales tax? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now to talk about what we can expect from the Economic Summit is Jonathan Wiseman, an economic policy writer for The Washington Post. He joins us from the newspaper studio in Washington, D.C. Thanks for being with us, Jonathan.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
First of all, who will be participating in this summit this week? Are all the participants pretty much supporters of the president?
Well, pretty much. In fact, they just took a lot of the people that were at the last economic summit in 2002 in Waco and put them back onto this one. So a lot of these names were actually familiar to those of us who were actually watching the Waco summit. Some of these people actually just come straight from the administration. Pam Olson, who headed tax policy at the Treasury Department in the first 2 years or 3 years under the Bush administration, will be there to talk about tax policy. There will be other former administration people and a lot of economists and academics who have shown themselves to be strong supporters of the administration. There are also going to be a lot of business people who stood by the president during the reelection campaign are getting a little boost by getting to appear with him now.
So will there be a range of views? Will there be new ideas? Or is this stuff that you will have heard before?
Well, the administration likes to say that there are going to be a range of ideas and a free-flowing flow of ideas and debate. I don't think you probably will see a whole lot of that. However, sometimes these forums do tend to show off ideas that people hadn't been thinking of. I mean, in the Waco summit in 2002, Charles Schwab kind of seemed to be chiming in from left field, saying that we needed to do away with the double taxation of dividends. Well, it turned out that a few months later, the Bush administration came out with a proposal to do away with the double taxation of dividends. And in fact, Charles Schwab had been kind of put up to say that by the president's chief economist, Glenn Hubbard, at the time. So we'll be watching for ideas that may sound like they're coming out of left field, but may actually be coming out of the White House.
Well, to what degree will we get a better sense of the president's priorities in his second term?
I think you'll be listening for what you don't hear. If you don't hear a lot of talk, which I don't think we will, about a flat tax or a national sales tax, we probably won't have a flat tax or a national sales tax. And you're going to get a better – they're trying to build a consensus here that something needs to be done. Something needs to be done about the tax code. Something needs to be done about Social Security. Something needs to be done about – runaway domestic spending. And this is actually kind of the opening salvo in what looks to be a very long public campaign to build support for a very, very ambitious economic agenda for the second term.
Tax reform, the president has said, is a priority, but does Social Security come before that? Is that a higher priority?
Yes. Social Security reform will be the first major thing on the list. Well, actually, there's going to be legislation to limit civil lawsuits first because that is the furthest along. Social Security has actually – the president has been talking about Social Security since the 2000 campaign. He actually hasn't put a lot more bones meat on the bones of what he talked about back then. But there is a sense that it is ripe, that he wants to do it, that this is going to be his big legacy item for the second term. And he's going to do Social Security reform first up, try to get that done this year. During the process, during 2005, the tax reform panel that he will name soon will be working up a tax reform plan, and that will probably be the top agenda item for 2006, assuming that he gets Social Security reform done, which is actually a big assumption.
Yeah, that is a big assumption. These are two really big legislative reform packages that would have to be approved in, I guess, really the beginning of a second term, right? I mean,
huge. But it is one of those things that if it doesn't get approved quickly, it tends to not get approved at all. So Social Security reform, the Republican leadership of Congress says, look, we don't really want to do this, but if you're going to do it, let's do it fast. We do not want to be debating Social Security reform during an election year. So look for 2005 or bust.
Yeah. Now, President Bush is expected to name a tax reform panel in the next few weeks. That panel, as I understand, will have, I think, till the summer to come up with some ideas. What might we expect to hear from them?
Well, from what I'm gathering, this panel will not be trying to come up with a radical solution, a solution that basically throws out the current income tax structure and comes up with something completely new, like a single flat rate tax or a national sales tax or a value added tax, which is like a national sales tax. They will probably be looking at incremental changes to the tax code that will favor savings and investment. In other words, try to do away with as much taxation on dividends, capital gains, interest, investment, business investment in new equipment as possible. In fact, if you look, there is a study that was done by the Treasury Department in late 2002 that outlined five different tax reform proposals. The final one, which is called Reform the Current Income Tax, it's the least sexy of them, but the lobbying community in Washington is latching onto this as the template for where we are heading.
And explain that a little bit further.
Okay. Under this plan, they would pursue a proposal that the Treasury Department has been pushing for a couple of years now, which is these lifetime savings accounts. What it would let you do is set up a $5,000 account. You could save $5,000 each year. That money would be the gains on those accounts would be shielded from any taxation. So interest, income, dividends, capital gains would be shielded. And a family of four could set up a $20,000 a year account. Now, look, most people can't even max out their IRAs right now. So for all but really the very, very richest, if you open one of these accounts, you will no longer have capital gains, interest, or dividend taxation. It's actually a very dramatic proposal. They'll pursue this. They will pursue getting rid of the alternative minimum tax. That's one part of this proposal. And, of course, to pay for all of these things, they have to do something. And the biggest thing on the block right now is doing away with the deduction for state and local taxes. It's perfect because, first of all, the state and local deduction hits more affluent people the most because they're the ones that itemize. And it hits the blue states the most, the Democratic states, because those are the high tax states. It's a great proposal for Republicans. They'll also look at taxing the value of health insurance as if it was income. For instance, if you are an employee, you have a $5,000 health insurance policy from your employer. Well, that $5,000 would be tacked onto your income.
Now, dare I say, that doesn't seem like you'd be simplifying the tax code by doing that.
No, but the idea is that all income should be taxed once and only once. That's kind of the Republican mantra, the White House mantra, and their sense is that, well, look, the fact is that your employer is deducting the cost of his health insurance from his taxes, so you as an employee should be taxed on the value of your health insurance. It's a way to raise money too. Obviously, if you're going to be cutting taxes on savings and investment, you need to be raising taxes somewhere. Finally, one more. They are also talking about, and perhaps very controversially, talking about taxing Social Security benefits more than they are now.
Huh. We're talking about taxes and tax reform with Jonathan Wiseman, the economic policy writer for The Washington Post. We'd love to hear from you. The number to call, 1-800-989-8255. And we are going to take a call now from Robert in Burlington, Vermont. Hi, Robert.
Hi. I'm pretty far left of center, but I would really think that simplification of the tax code is far overdue. But I'm scared as how far the Republicans and the Bush administration are going to do it. And it's the way that they twist things up, like the capital gains tax cut. That complicates the tax code. The no taxation on dividends, the place where they should eliminate that double taxation is at the corporate income tax venue, not on the personal venue. It complicates the tax code, and it isn't fair to the poor. They claim that a flat tax would make it simpler, but that's really not what's complicating the tax code. What complicates it is all these rules and then the exceptions to the rules and exceptions to the exceptions. There's no reason why a progressive tax rate structure is incompatible with a simple tax code. We need to treat income as income. That's simple, and it's also fair. We need to have progressive rates, and we need to eliminate the double taxation at the corporate income level. In fact, I think that corporate income tax should be a flat tax, and it should be fairly low, somewhat because of this double taxation issue. Anyway, that's all I had to say.
So, do you equate simplifying the tax code with conservatism? You said that you are left of center.
No. I think simplifying it in principle is fine. I think we should have done it decades ago. I thought that they were going to do it in 1986. But
well, they did it. They actually did pass tax reform in 1986.
But it didn't really simplify it very much.
All right, Jonathan, can you respond to those?
Well, it's interesting because in 1986, the tax reform movement in some ways was spurred by Democrats. It was Bill Bradley, and a senator from New Jersey, and Dick Gephardt from Missouri, who came up with the first proposal, most popular legislative proposal to simplify. And it is somewhat surprising that the Democrats have not come forward and said, oh, we support simplification too, and here's our proposal. They really have been on the sidelines on this thing. Now, I do want to give I'll just tell you what the administration's arguments for on dividend taxation is. There are people who say that if you want to eliminate double taxation of dividends, you should just eliminate the dividend taxation from the business side, and then dividends would be taxed on the individuals who receive them. The problem with this is that a huge, huge number of dividends are going to tax-free entities, huge retirement accounts and things, nonprofits that don't pay taxes. So, in fact, if you eliminated it from the corporate side and then it's going to entities that don't pay taxes, huge amounts of profits would just simply be not taxed at all. Now, that actually does happen now, but you would be institutionalizing the non-taxation of corporate profits if you did that.
Let me just ask you one thing about the tax reform of 1986. If the tax code was simplified back then, why does it need to be simplified again? Did it get complicated all over again?
This is the tax code. Actually, since 86, we have learned a lot about the tax code, and we've learned that simplification is kind of like pruning a bush. You cut it back, and it just begins the process of the proliferation of tax shelters. I mean, by 1986, largely because of the huge 1981 tax cut, which was filled with loopholes, the tax code had become untenable, and people were really in revolt. I mean, more so than right now. There was a sense that there was just that rich people weren't paying any taxes because there were so many loopholes, and your neighbor may be earning the same amount as you, but he's paying half as many taxes, and there was really a lot of tumult. So the 1986 tax reform actually passed against all odds, and it really did simplify the tax code. I would actually differ from the caller.
Jonathan, I'm afraid that you're going to have to wrap it up because we're going to have to take a break.
Almost
now.
Immediately, those things started coming back.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Jonathan Wiseman is an economic policy writer for The Washington Post. He joined us from the studio at The Post in Washington, D.C. We are talking about the tax code, and we're taking your calls. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking about the tax code and we're taking your calls. Is tax reform an important issue to you? What would you be willing to lose for the sake of a simpler tax form? Join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now to discuss the pros and cons of possible tax reform plans are Jason Furman, a visiting senior fellow at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. He joins us from our New York Bureau. Welcome to the program, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
And Steve Moore is the president of the Club for Growth and author of Bullish on Bush, How George W. Bush's Ownership Society Will Make America Stronger. He joins us by phone from Chicago. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Lynn.
Well, maybe I'll start with you, and you could tell us, Steve. We were just talking about the fact that that there was tax reform in 1986 and that it's grown out again like a bush. Why is our tax code so complicated?
Well, it's very well put. You know, it's just about 20 years ago the last time we cleaned out the tax system of all the pollution that finds its way in the tax code year after year. And that's because members of Congress and special interest groups like to put special favors in the tax code and carve out little niches that benefit their own little constituency. And the problem that happens over time is you get more and more of these niches and carve-outs in the system, and then the tax code looks like a piece of Swiss cheese. And so after 20 years, it's probably time we do this again, where we broaden out the base, make sure we get rid of all of these special interest loopholes, but cut the tax rates, hopefully to one rate, a flat tax rate, and also make the system more conducive to economic growth by getting rid of the double and triple tax on saving and investment, which are really essential to making the economy grow faster.
So you're a proponent of the flat tax?
Yeah, I'd like to see some kind of system that is a one-rate system, so everyone pays the same rate, although you'd have a generous deduction so people of low incomes would not have to pay the tax. And then I believe that we should have a system that's consumption-based, so that you pay tax on what you consume, not what you put into the economy, your work and your effort and your business creation and so on.
Now, Jonathan Weissman of the Washington Post, who joined us at the beginning of the show, seemed to be saying that he thought that the flat tax was not going to get much consideration.
Oh, I think he's wrong about that. I think there's a lot of ways you can skin this cat. Back in 1986, I was involved in that fight, and I remember all the reporters and all of the political prognosticators said it can't be done. You can't overcome all of these special interest groups and make tax reform a reality. And we made a big stride back in 1986. So Jonathan Weissman is right. It's very difficult to take on these hordes of special interest groups that are, in many cases, going to spend millions and millions of dollars to try to defeat a flat tax, but I think the public is so fed up with the system, the complexity and the unfairness of it, that maybe the stars are in line to get this done.
Jason Furman, in 1986, Democrats were in control in Congress on Capitol Hill. They also wanted tax reform. There was a lot of political will. Ronald Reagan put himself out for this. What's the atmosphere now, particularly, and what are the Democrats thinking about the whole idea of tax reform?
There's some Democrats that have tax reform ideas that have been percolating. People like Rahm Emanuel and some of the primaries in the Democratic Party this time around, you saw tax reform proposals. But what I think there isn't is a lot of faith that you can work with President Bush on this issue in a bipartisan manner in the way that President Reagan was able to in the 1980s. I think people don't trust the president when it comes to taxes. Democrats don't. They don't trust him for a number of reasons. He says he wants the tax code to be simpler, but in his first term, he actually made the tax code more complicated. You look on your IRS form and it tells you how long it takes you to fill out that form. That went up by 28 minutes under President Bush's first term as a result of laws that he proposed, that he signed into law. So the tax code actually got more complicated. It got less fair. There were less incentives for moderate income families to save, to really help the families that need it most. So there just aren't a lot of Democrats that believe this is someone they can work with.
What are some of the proposals that Democrats would be in favor of? Are there any out there that you could describe?
Yeah, Well, let's just talk about one, which is increasing savings and helping families accumulate wealth and have a more important stake in our society. That's something the president has talked about in terms of an ownership society, Social Security, individual accounts, eliminating the taxes on savings. But let me tell you a better way to go about it. Lower and moderate income families right now don't get any incentive to save at all. If you don't make enough money, you don't get any benefit from an IRA and the tax deduction you get from it. If you work for a small business, you're often not going to have a 401k, so you're not going to have a lot of the advantages to save that other people have. If you give more tax credits to moderate income families, it'll help them save. It'll increase national savings and economic growth, and it'll give them more of a stake in our economy, precisely the goals the president set forth.
Steve Moore, how do you make the tax code both simple and fair?
Well, I think that you want to make it simple, fair, and pro-growth. You know, around the world, countries are cutting their tax rates. They understand that high tax rates inhibit growth and they inhibit competitiveness of countries with respect to their business environment. So those are really the three goals. And I think what you have to do is you have to create almost like a postcard return. This was the idea that Steve Forbes talked about when he ran for president in 1996. And when I used to work for Dick Armey back in 1994, we came up with the idea of this postcard tax return. And there's just no reason that it should have to take Americans, dozens and dozens of hours to figure out how much taxes they owe. A simple system with no deductions but a flat rate, I bet there are a lot of Americans out there who would go for that kind of system in a heartbeat because they would regard it as fairer. And if you have that kind of system, one of the things that makes it fairer is that if you and I have the same income, it's quite possible under the current tax code that you may pay much more taxes than I do because I take advantage of all these loopholes. So that's the way you get the tax system fairer, is get rid of the loopholes that in many cases it's the rich people who take advantage of.
We're talking about taxes and the tax code and reforming the tax code, simplifying the tax code. If you'd like to join our discussion, the number is 1-800-989-8255. Let's take a call from Rick, and he is in Phoenix, Arizona. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Len. You know, I couldn't agree with what Steve said more. You know, the Steve Forbes proposal that he floated a while back was right on the money, and I got to believe that, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are just like me. All we want to do is want it fair. I'm not opposed to paying taxes at all. I want to pay more. You know, I want to make more and I want to pay more, but I want it to be fair. I want everybody to pay the same thing. And a flat tax is going to eliminate a lot of bureaucracy. And, there's certainly going to be tough to do. I mean, there's a lot of interests out there that, they don't want to pay the same thing. They want to pay as little as they can. And it just needs to be fair.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Rick.
Okay, thank you.
Let's move on to some other perennials that are out there, but I don't know whether they're going to go anywhere either. Maybe flat tax will, but what about a national sales tax or a values-added tax? Jason Foreman, this the idea of taxing consumptions instead of income.
Well, all these taxes, flat taxes and retail sales taxes, have the same effect. I mean, Steve Moore was being a little bit misleading to your listeners and saying, oh, the wealthy get to take advantage of all these deductions. That's true. The wealthy do have more deductions they can take advantage of, but they also pay higher rates. And at the end of the day, they pay a higher fraction of their income in taxes. The inventors of the flat tax, Hall and Rybushka, who invented it in the first edition of their book, described it as a tremendous boon to the economic elite. That's a quote. And they also said that it would result in higher taxes on average people. That's another quote. If people want higher taxes, if they want a tremendous boon to the economic elite, go ahead. Fill out your returns on the tax form. But if you want a progressive tax code, if you believe that suits our values as a society more, that you don't want your own taxes increased, then you can't go the route of a consumption tax or a retail sales tax or a flat tax. Any one of those would mean that for middle-class families, their taxes would go up.
Let me read an email from Keith in San Rafael, California. How will the self-employed and contract workers fare in the upcoming tax changes? We need things like full deductibility for health care insurance payments, easing the Social Security, self-employment, home office deductions, etc. Self-employed contract workers are a growing factor in the U.S. labor market, yet the code seems almost entirely aimed at traditional W-2 type employees. Jason Furman or Steve Moore?
Well, self-employed people really do face a big burden with the tax system right now, especially in the complexity of the system, because if you're self-employed, you know, you've got even additional tax forms to fill out. I believe that under the flat tax, you know, you substantially reduce the amount of tax compliance costs and energy that go into filling out the tax form. I'd make one other point for small business owners and for self-employed workers is that, that what President Bush wants to do with the Social Security payroll tax is allow some of those workers to actually put some of that money into like an individual retirement account, which goes to the point that Jason was making earlier about how can we encourage lower income workers to save more. One of the great ways of doing that is by taking the payroll tax, which is paid, 67% of American households pay more in payroll tax than they do in income tax. Let them put that money into real savings.
Let me ask you something, Steve. Short of the flat tax, in the event that some of the predictions that are being made right now are that it's not going to go anywhere, I mean, short of that, where do you ratchet down to from there in terms of what you'd like to see?
Well, I think one idea that President Bush has, which is a kind of a simple idea, but I think something that would be very popular with millions of Americans, would be to just allow people to, when they, you know how IRAs work, where if you take out an IRA, you get to defer your tax payments on those. They've been very popular savings vehicles for middle-class workers. We should just get rid of the caps on the IRAs and basically allow people to have unlimited savings accounts. This would allow people to build up private pools of capital. It would increase the U.S. savings rate. And as all your listeners know, one of the problems with our economy right now is Americans save too little. So that would be a small change to the tax code that would have very big economic benefits.
All right, we're going to take a call from Janet in Rochester, New York. Hi, Janet.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I was interested in your guest's comments on the suggestion of eliminating state and local taxes. In the Northeast...
You mean deductions for state and local taxes?
The deductions for state and local taxes. Because I know in the Northeast, high property taxes are... a battle here, and I just wondered how they think it'll affect especially people who are just barely able to qualify for homes. And I believe the history of it was that did America wanted to encourage home ownership and therefore also grow the economy. So I just was wondering about their comments about how this change might affect.
All right, thanks for your call. And just to point out, from what I have read, President Bush has said that he wants to maintain deductions like deductions for interest rates and charitable contributions, but hasn't really talked about this idea of deductions for state and local taxes, might be willing to get rid of that deduction. So this woman is expressing some concern about that, and I imagine that state and local governments wouldn't be very happy about it either. Jason Furman.
Yeah, first of all, this goes against the trend that we've seen in this area. Just a few months ago, the president signed into law a new deduction for sales taxes in states that only have sales taxes and don't have income taxes. So the trend is towards more deductions in this area. I think politically it would be extremely difficult to get rid of, and I think pretty unattractive, because the first claim on that money would be solving our alternative minimum tax problem. That would use up more than half of the savings you'd get from eliminating this. I think if you go out there and offer people a deal, you're going to solve some problem they haven't even heard of in terms of this complicated snare of the alternative minimum tax, and you're going to do it by getting rid of this very popular deduction. Just don't think that's going to fly.
We're talking about reforming the tax code, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Steve Moore, what about the politics of this? I mean, there seems to me there are minefields all over tax reform.
That's for sure. You know, when you talk about things like the mortgage interest deduction, I mean, I remember when I was working for Steve Forbes in 1996, and he ran with the flat tax idea, and it got very broad support. You may recall there was that period when Steve Forbes really caught on nationally, was doing very well, and then the housing industry ended up dumping millions of dollars against him and saying this was going to destroy the value of your home if this happens. It was all complete, utter economic nonsense, but it did scare people, and it hurt Forbes in the race. In fact, it knocked him out. So you're right. I view tax reform as the ultimate Washington versus America issue. Everybody in Washington hates tax reform because, after all, the genesis of all the power in Washington emanates from the tax code, whereas almost all Americans outside the Beltway of Washington would like a simpler, fairer system. And so it's very difficult to do politically. I've got to give Bush a lot of credit that that he's taking this on. And the only thing that I think makes me kind of sorrowful is that Democrats haven't really gotten into the debate. I mean, there are no Democrats who've come up with any kind of creative ideas about what to do about this abomination of a tax code we have right now.
All right, let's see if we can get one more call in before we have to go. Alex in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hi, Alex. Go ahead.
Yes, I do want to ask a question as to why Democrats aren't joining the fight. And also, as a starting point where we're coming from, I don't see the current tax code as progressive at all, and I would point to the fact that one-third of all federal tax comes from the payroll tax, which is a very, very regressive tax. Secondly, you look at the likelihood of being audited. Poor people are much more likely to be audited, and then when those people that are audited take recourse, then if you have money, you can go to the legal system and get a jury. If you don't have money, you go to the legal system and you can't have a jury.
So, all right. Okay, thanks so much for your call, and I'm going to see if our guest can respond to your comments.
This is Jason Furman. I have to say I agree with Steve and your caller that Democrats do need to do more to be active on tax reform, to come up with proposals of their own. I think at the end of the day I'm very, very pessimistic that we'll be able to work with the president to get anything done in the next year or two. But these are important issues, and I think we have had too much silence from the Democratic Party on them. That being said, what these ideas would show is you don't need to reduce everything to a single rate or a single consumption retail sales tax in order to simplify the tax code. There's a lot of ways to make it simpler, fairer, more pro-growth, encourage savings, without having to take that incredibly regressive step that would make the tax code, you may not think it's progressive enough, your caller, but it'd be even less progressive if we switched to a single rate for income taxes.
Steve Moore, in 1986, as we said earlier, it seems like there was more interest on the part of the public. The public was really interested in this issue, wanted it to happen. President Reagan was really out there. The Democrats are with him. What's it going to take this time?
Oh, I think there's a huge grassroots appeal to this issue. You know, I went around in the campaign this year, and I just, when talking to Americans, this was one of the first things they brought up, is the complexity and unfairness of the tax system. I think Jason is right. You know, if you go back 10 or 15 years ago, you had people like Jerry Brown when he ran for president in 1992, who was for a flat tax, and you had Leon Panetta, who was Bill Clinton's chief of staff, who was in favor of a flat tax, and you had Bill Bradley, and Dick Gephardt had a version of a flat tax. So I think it's not going to happen if we don't get some kind of bipartisan consensus as we had in 1986. But, you know, we're the most powerful nation in the world. We have the biggest and strongest economy. There's no reason we shouldn't have a 21st century
tax code.
All right.
Thanks so much, both of you, Steve Moore and Jason Furman. When we come back from a short break, why the quiet airplane cabin may soon be a thing of the past. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.